Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So I think for the listeners who may have heard or may not have heard the show prior to this, I let Dr. Hamill explain to me what HHT actually stands for. But go ahead, tell the listeners this phenomenal set of syllables.
Hereditary hemorrhagic telangiectasia.
Gesundheit. That's very impressive.
Welcome to the club that you didn't want to join. We're the voice of rare disease, and this jingle doesn't rhyme. Nordpod, Nordpod, Nordpod.
My name is Matthew Zachary, and welcome to Nordpod, right here on the Offscript Media Network. Now, I've been advocating on behalf of cancer and rare disease patients for over 20 years. Why? Because I am one. NordPod is the official podcast of the National Organization for Rare Disorders. And a quick reminder before we get started that if you like the show, please leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts because it helps other listeners like you discover the show. Now, let's get started. Hello there, friends. Welcome back to NordPod, the voice of rare disease. On the show today, we're going to welcome Philip Bright, a senior at the University of Kentucky who has been living with HHT since he was diagnosed at 3 years old because he was screened because his parents have the condition, which, as you know from the last show, is congenital and passed down as a dominant trait. He spent his adolescence, his middle school years, and his high school years living with this condition and managing the symptoms with support and treatment from his doctors and his family. We joke about how, you know, genetics can be a blessing and a curse, and thanks, Dad, for giving this to me. I have the same condition as you. But at the same time, his life has led him to a point where he's made a decision to pay it forward. And what I mean by that is he just got accepted to medical school, and he's going to pursue a career as a pulmonologist to help others just like him. As we said on the last show, among all the things he's learned living with this condition and doing his undergraduate research fellowship with Dr. Hamill is that a significant amount of people with HHT are undiagnosed, which can lead to major problems later in life. He's an incredible young man with an exciting future ahead of him, and we talk about all the things from the impact of his family to living with bloody noses, empathy in medicine, and what he'd like to see in medicine as a pulmonologist in the future. It's a great show. Enjoy. Philip Bright, welcome to NordPod.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about HHT and how it's impacted me today.
So we wanted to have you on the show, A, because you are a great example, as the listeners will find out, of someone who's actively paying it forward to make things a little better for what they went through that they didn't ask to go through, but also because on the last show, your doctor, Dr. Adrian Hamill, was on, and we talked about what it was like for her to have you work under her in the undergraduate research fellowship, and this is kind of a tie that binds show about doctors, patients, researchers, and I'm channeling my old 48-year-oldness, the next generation of advocates. So let's talk about genetics, right? Again, lots of syllables there, but you have a condition called HHT, but it's congenital. Do you feel like you ever want to say thanks, Dad?
You know, my middle brother, he got lucky. He did not get diagnosed with it, so sometimes I do want to say thank you, Dad. Me and my youngest brother, we both got the short end of the stick with it.
So you had a chest scan when you were three, right? That's pretty young. And you have something called a pulmonary, or I'm not going to say this right. What, help me say this word. Arteriovenous?
Pulmonary arteriovenous malformation.
That's a lot of syllables. So what exactly is that?
So it's a malformation that, if you think about it, in like a normal person, they have artery, capillary bed, and then veins. But in a person with HHT, and for me example, my capillary bed is basically messed up in a way that you have an artery that is connected more directly to a vein. So you have the high blood pressure from the artery flowing directly into the low blood pressure vein. And that can cause this malformation to expand over time. And ultimately, it can rupture. And it can happen in, for me, it's in my lungs, but can also happen in your brain, your stomach and GI tract, and also your spinal cord.
You ever think at this time in your life you'd know these things?
You know, no, I did not. In high school, I had no idea what I was going to do. I did a lot of career exploration. But then I fell in love with medicine, so here I am.
Yeah, I feel like your adolescence was kind of like predetermining your future because you were stuck in this sort of, I've got to deal with this now as a kid, and what else can I do? Can you talk to us about what it was like growing up, middle school, early high school, you know, having these nosebleeds and these symptoms?
Yeah, so the pulmonary AVM never really caused me too much trouble, because it's always been small enough that the doctors can't really operate on it to get rid of it. But another symptom of HHT is the severe nosebleeds, like you mentioned. And it wasn't just any, you know, typical nosebleed. I was almost, the blood came so quickly that I would have to use my hand sometimes to catch the blood. That's how quick it would rush. And it would take almost 5 minutes to get it to stop. They were pretty intense nosebleeds.
Do you ever get to the point where you say, but you should see the other guy?
No, I never used that, but that's a good one that I should use next time.
I'm arming you with everything you need.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. So in terms of like, growing up with this condition, was there stress and anxiety more than usual? How did you find ways, if you did, to deal with this? And how did your parents help you get through this or live with this and grow up to be who you are today?
Definitely when I was, you know, younger and not as interested in medicine, it was a lot of uncertainty, not knowing what's going to happen and what could happen, of course. But I think the good thing, the one positive about that's come out of this is, since HHT is a genetic disease and it's a dominant genetic disease, so siblings have 50% chance of getting it from their parents, is that a lot of people in my family have it, so I don't feel like I'm alone. Whereas compared to other rare diseases, one person in their entire family might have the disease. But I feel like that I have a good, you know, support system from everyone around me.
So I think for the listeners who may have heard or may not have heard the show prior to this, I let Dr. Hamill explain to me what HHT actually stands for. But go ahead, tell the listeners this phenomenal set of syllables.
Hereditary hemorrhagic telangiectasia.
Gesundheit. That's very impressive.
Again, the only reason I know that is from the summer that I worked with Dr. Hamill. Otherwise, I probably would not be able to do it either.
Have you or your family been able to meet other kids with this condition along the way?
Other than my, you know, immediate family, I haven't met any other person with HHT. Because it is fairly rare. The only experience I've had with other patients is through the research that I did with Dr. Hamill. But the one thing that was the downside was during COVID, I wasn't actually allowed inside the hospital. So I watched the hospital visit via Zoom. And I also read a lot of patient charts and their history. So I saw a lot of similarities between, you know, my diagnosis and how people reacted, you know, just having so many questions, like what's going to happen now, where to go from this. So I definitely felt a connection while researching with the patients that I was researching.
So I'm reading here, and based on my chat with Dr. Hamel last week, this is a condition that's not normally tested for, especially in children, because it is, I think if the stats are correct, like 1 in 5,000 children have this disease, and it's a dominant, not a recessive gene. But unless the parents know they have it, there's no reason to know they should test the children. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, you've got it spot on. That's kind of, that's why, the main reason why I want to go into medicine and work with HHT is that there are so many patients out there that are undiagnosed. And the symptoms are there. There's the telangiectasias, which are little red dots on your skin, and then the severe nosebleeds. But if you don't catch it early, you can kind of go down a slippery slope of parents don't get diagnosed, and then their kids won't get diagnosed.
So you're currently a senior at the University of Kentucky. Are the nosebleeds something you can like spidey sense, or they're just totally random?
No, it's at this point, because they are pretty intense, it is something that I can spidey sense. I can like feel it start almost running. So I have a pretty, you know, once I feel it running, I know to immediately lift my head up and start pinching my nose to try and minimize any bloody nose that I'll get.
Are you like buying t-shirts at Kohl's every week?
No, it's not that bad. I've got it down to a science at this point.
I would hope you have all the life hacks down to deal with this. Wow. So are you not allowed to have aspirin or any blood thinners?
I'm not too sure about that, but the one thing that has come out of this that I know I'm not allowed to do is scuba diving. That was kind of a big hit, because this summer before all this kind of happened, I had just gone scuba diving in Costa Rica for a summer trip. So I thought I was going to have a lifelong, you know, scuba diving adventure in store for me. But now I've been told that I won't be able to scuba dive.
Well, let's really lean into that, because, you know, I was diagnosed in my 20s and I was supposed to go off and do all these things, and I watched my friends do them and I couldn't do them anymore. I'm getting that sense from you as well. And What are the things that, I mean, it's hard to not feel jealous or envious that, oh, you got to go do this and I didn't because I have this. But to what extent are you going to miss things you couldn't do, and what can you possibly do now that you can't do those things?
I mean, I've probably been swimming since I could walk. So I've always been in the pool and stuff. Swimming is a big part of my family history. So I've always enjoyed going to the pool, and then therefore I've always enjoyed going to the ocean. So when I first went scuba diving, you know, it was so cool going down 40 feet into the ocean and seeing something that I've never seen before. And now that's going to be restricted to me. And I'm only going to be about 1 foot into the water snorkeling, because I won't be able to use the oxygen tanks.
Yeah, I mean, people get nosebleeds that do not have HHT when they scuba dive. Probably the last place you want to be at this point for your own safety, I assume.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to be eaten by any sharks. But the reason I can't go scuba diving, it's not for the nosebleeds. It's for people with long AVMs. Dr. Hamel explained it to me, but I don't know the exact science behind it. But it has to do with, it's similar to kind of the bends, you know, when you come up too fast.
Yes.
You can get air bubbles that pass through the AVM and go straight to your brain. And then there's a chance that the bubble might not dissolve and can ultimately cause a stroke.
Also something you do not want to have.
Correct. Especially in the water, of course.
Agreed. And how has your social circle been through high school? I mean, this is probably not something you can or want to hide.
No, it's honestly, I think it's almost kind of a cool fact to tell people at this point, because I don't feel like my life is really in danger. So I get to almost be an advocate for it and just spread awareness. My girlfriend, she, at this point, it gets old for her because I talk to her about HHT so much, but I really do enjoy telling people about it and just spreading awareness to anybody that I can. Especially anytime I see somebody get a nosebleed, I have to mention, like, hey, just an FYI, if you have any other of these symptoms, you know, maybe go get it checked out.
And again, like your social circle, your friends are outside of the asterisk that is this condition you have to deal with. Do you feel you lead a regular, whatever normal me? I'm channeling my aging Gen Xer, whatever normal is for a 19-year-old, 20-year-old college student.
For sure. other than the typical hospital visits every once in a while and then the common symptoms, my life is completely normal, and I really have no complaints about it. You know, I'll go play soccer with my friends. I'll go hiking, camping, swimming. You know, I'll do everything.
Well, with that, we will take a quick break and be right back with Philip Bright.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I'm just going to call you Phil. I feel like we're friends at this point.
Okay.
I love that this is a condition that affected your life, your family's life, and now you want to pursue a career in medicine. I don't think it should have to take living with this condition to make you want to go be a doctor, but I commend you on wanting to sort of, it's a labor of love, you know, to go to med school and get your degree and then do residency, internship, fellowship. But clearly, you know, you are trying to create a career for yourself to help people just like you.
So my uncle, he passed away when he was in his 20s and I never got to meet him. So with him and then the research that I did with Dr. Hamill and seeing all these stories about kids, you know, young adults and even old adults being rushed to the hospital with HHT, I feel like I have a unique perspective and a reason to pursue medicine and ultimately diagnose HHT. And my goal is to make early diagnosis for HHT so that these rushes to the hospital and dangerous circumstances don't have to happen for families and that they can keep their families together.
I love that. I do want to talk about your fellowship with Dr. Hamill. How did that come about?
It was basically kind of spur of the moment. So when I went in for one of my annual checkups, I just approached her and said, "Hey, Dr. Hamill, you know, I'm a pre-med student pursuing, I want to go to med school. Do you have any research that would be available? Because I obviously have HHT and it affects a lot of people in my family. So it's something I'm passionate about." And so she told me to go ahead and apply to the Cincinnati Children's Research Fellowship. And I went ahead and applied and we matched and then that's how it began.
So what did you do in your work with her?
So I was actually very lucky because this was this summer when COVID had just picked up. So the hospitals were all shut down and stuff. So the actual research fellowship through Children's was canceled, but she was able to have me come on and do remote research. So I helped them organize their patient data and charts. And then I also attended hospital visits with them and just collected data with what the patients had to say and everything.
So there's a phrase called inside baseball, which basically means like you're inside a club, you kind of know the secrets, there's some life hacks here and there. And you had a chance to work in, well, virtual clinic per se, or like an ad hoc clinic because of the pandemic with Dr. Hamill. What were the biggest takeaways for you from that experience?
The biggest thing that I remember experiencing was when I was attending the hospital visit with Dr. Hamill, and she was telling somebody about their diagnosis with HHT and just, you know, the way that they reacted. It was a bunch of questions after that, you know, like, what exactly is the disease? What does this mean? How's it going to affect my life after this? And I just remember the personal connection that I had with that patient through our disease. And that's something that I want to transpire while I'm a doctor. You know, being able to have a personal relationship with a patient, I think is something that's super important.
That's a very sort of, I would say, a prescient answer, especially these days when there's a sentiment that it's really hard to have empathy in medicine when you're a doctor, because there are lots of restrictions on how much time you can see and who gets billing. I mean, I'm getting in the weeds on stuff you probably are going to have to learn about one day. And it's a blessing and a curse to understand how to navigate that. But, you know, my question, because I think, you know, before we hit record, for the listeners, you told me you got accepted into medical school. So first and foremost, congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm really curious to see future casting your experience there, because there really isn't a lot of empathy training in medical school, and yet you're coming into it with the perspective of already having empathy embedded in how you want to practice medicine.
I think the where it really kicked off for me was, it wasn't even the research. It was even before that, in my freshman year when I was volunteering at the hospital. And this was probably by far one of my most favorite experiences. I worked in the emergency department, and I went around and spoke with geriatric patients, because a majority of geriatric patients, they came by themselves because they were either waiting for their family to come in, or they weren't going to have any family come visit them at all. So there were several patients where I sat down with them, and we just talked for 45, even to an hour long, and just had genuine conversations. There is one couple that I'll never forget. At the end of our conversation, they got up and said, "I just have to hug you. This was amazing. Thank you for coming and talking with us." And I think that's really where my, you know, drive for empathy and having these genuine relationship with patients first began.
Again, it can't be understated how important it is for there to be at least some kind of relationship between the doctor and the patient. So one thing in medicine that has been of the utmost relevance for years and years, cancer, rare disease, whatever it is to hope you find things early. We used to use the term early detection, finding it before it becomes a problem. And in your case, it's how do we increase screenings when it's very difficult to know you may have something worth needing screened?
So I think the biggest thing, which we had just talked about, is having those genuine relationships with patients. I want to be the type of doctor where a patient comes in and it's not just about why they're in there, but it could be about anything. Because I think that helps open up the door to finding out different symptoms that they might be having that's not directly related to, you know, to why they might have first come in. So I think you just have to be a good listener and look for signs that might not be directly related. And, you know, that will help open up the door to many different things that could be happening.
Yeah, and again, someone in your situation who knows he's a carrier of this gene, there's a guaranteed certainty that, you know, your kids would need to be screened one day assuming you may have kids one day. You are aware of this, so you have another sort of like a loophole when you start to talk to patients that you're aware this should be a conversation to have. I wanted to spin off into the guidelines. We talked about this with Dr. Hamill last week. What do you know about the HHT guidelines?
I know some about it because Dr. Hamill talks about it a lot, because I know that she worked on it a little bit. But I know that the guidelines are basically the one-stop shop for anything in terms of HHT. It's for patients and doctors, and it's basically the guidelines that help make a diagnosis for HHT, and then also what to do after a diagnosis. I know it ranges from pediatrics to adults as well.
What medical school did you get accepted to?
I'll be attending the University of Kentucky.
That's amazing. Are you like on cloud nine? Like, oh my God, I'm going to med school.
I got accepted in October. And now since I'm a senior, I've just been cruising through college, happy as can be.
I'm going to nod my head here on the radio that senioritis is the best thing ever.
I can wholeheartedly agree with you on that. It's been amazing.
So how are you spending your time? You got, what's it? It's March of this taping. You got 2 months left.
I actually just turned 21 in January. So I've been going out to bars with friends and then just hanging outside, trying not to focus too much on class and just enjoy college before it ends.
That is exactly what you're supposed to be doing. So I completely concur that you should be doing all the things you need to be doing as a new 21-year-old in this country. Congratulations. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
It's really extraordinary how you and your family have sort of stepped up and supported this cause. How long have you been involved with NORD?
I've never heard of NORD until Dr. Hamill approached me because she was approached to come on the podcast and there was talk about having a patient come on. So she approached me and asked if I wanted to come on and I was immediately responded yes, because like I said, if I can increase awareness for HHC, I'll do it.
Yeah, it's a fabulous organization and I encourage you to dig into what they're doing because they do have an HHC community that you'd be a phenomenal addition to. Leading webinars or getting involved with communities and some of the organizations. I know the curehht.org would probably benefit significantly if you haven't already started to volunteer for them.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out.
So this is it's like a happy ending. I love it. We like when good things happen. We hate when bad things happen to good people, but here you are living your life to the fullest extent you possibly can. You know, I mean, kind of rip scuba diving career, but, you know, over under, right? You're happy? You're healthy?
Yep. I'm happy as can be.
So I'm reading that you still have to go through routine monitoring every couple of years for your AVM. Is that like a scanxiety or is it just something you're routinely expecting to happen?
It's routinely expecting to happen. But the good thing is that it's related to how much it grows. So originally when I first found the AVM, it was 2 years from that diagnosis. But since it hasn't grown, she's doubled the time that I have to get it screened for. So now it's 4 years. And then if it doesn't grow, I think she said it's probably going to jump up to more like 8-10 years, sometime in that range.
Well, good for you. Good for you. What a great story. Philip Bright is a senior at the University of Kentucky, newly admitted to med school and an HHT advocate. I'm so thrilled to speak with you. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. This was an awesome experience.
That's all for now. If you like this show, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social, and tell all your friends to listen. Tell us your rare disease story in your own voice by leaving a message for us at 855-AUDIO-66, and we might just use it in a future show. NordPod is a product of the National Organization for Rare Disorders and Off-Script Health. Our executive producers are Matthew Zachary, Leslie Nordstrom, and Andrew McDowell. Our senior producer is Valerie Machen. NordPod is recorded by Matthew Zachary and mixed and edited by Kyle Moore. Our theme music is by The Salvatones. Learn more about the music of The Salvatones at salvatones.org. For advertising and media inquiries, email media@offscript.com. That's media@offscript.com or visit us on the web at offscript.com. For more information about Nord, visit nordpod.org.